Welcome to the Norris Group's Real Estate Radio Show, hosted by author, investor, money partner, and real estate educator, Bruce Norris. Equipping California real estate professionals for tomorrow's challenges.
Hi, thanks for joining us. My name is Bruce Norris, and today, once again, we're joined by Alan Nevin, the Director of Economic Research for Market Point Realty Advisors. Alan, thanks for joining us again.
My pleasure.
As we discussed a little bit before last time, your company does research and then gives advice as to what might be coming in the future for developers and that type of thing. Is that correct?
That is correct.
Okay. We ended up our last interview talking about the repetitive nature of real estate cycles. And so I wanted to expand on that a little bit. Since I've been an adult, we've enjoyed three boom cycles and then they ended. And from the mid-70s to about 1981, California tripled in price. And prior to that market, California and U.S. median price were only about 10% apart. And after that boom, California nearly was about double the national price.
Yes, it was.
What made that occur? Why the difference in the expansion of California as opposed to the country?
Well, among other things, we had major gains in employment and major immigration here in the state from elsewhere in the nation.
Okay. So those two things, if you were looking into the future and you saw those coming for an area, you would expect that area to do very well?
Yes.
Okay. In 1979, we had about a 13% interest rate. By 1980, we probably had about a 17% interest rate for mortgages. And yet, during that year, prices still went up very significantly. How was it that an interest rate in the teens failed to stop a real estate boom?
Well, it did. It really did.
Eventually it did.
Well, no, it wasn't even eventually. We really had a massive shutdown in the industry in 80, 81, 82.
Correct. But at, say, 1979, with a 13% interest rate, it wasn't stopping anything.
Yeah, that the rate increase happened at towards the end of 79. It wasn't there at the beginning. I'm sitting here looking at an interest rate chart.
Okay.
Going back to 79, and the average for 79 was barely 9%.
Okay, so it really took off after that.
Yeah, and it really related to the major increase in economic activity basically all around the country. Those were very good years. And, we're working from a very small base in terms of home prices. It's not like they were 800,000 and went up to a million.
No, they were 34 and went up to about 100.
Absolutely.
Okay.
And California, if you trace the history of home prices in California, I have a table that shows how California home prices directly related to legislative acts. And starting in the early 70s, the state put into effect the Coastal Commission, the California CEQA, California Environmental Quality Act. That was the one that required environmental impact reports.
Okay.
And what that did basically is put a brake on the development of new lots. Now, it takes a while for it to work its way through the system, but that, in addition to various trends in the economics of the state, caused these major cycles to occur.
Okay. Were builders caught with a lot of unsold inventory at the end of that cycle?
The 79 to 83?
Yes.
Yes, they were.
Okay.
Tremendous. And that, incidentally, was not just here.
No, that was pretty national. That's true.
It was. And then we moved to the next major cycle, which was late 1990-ish, and that was a perfect storm in terms of California, because we had four things that happened simultaneously. We had the SNL fallout, which was devastating for the building industry.
And the SNL fallout, was that created by tax law changes?
That in part was, but it was really relating more to the laws on lending to developers.
Okay.
Where the most of the SNLs had capital, basically sub-corporations where they could become partners with developers.
Right, the FIREA laws?
Yes, and when the SNL went down, that took the ability of many builders to they couldn't be there anymore.
They couldn't get financing to finish the projects even.
No, well, the key is the SNL loans, or I should say, it's equity investment. To a large degree, was for major land companies, land development, as opposed to individual tracts. So you had a situation where the master plan communities, which in essence provided the lots for the builders, were no longer being processed because the SNLs were no longer there. So that was number one. Then, as part of that, the entire construction industry more or less shut down because of that. Third is the California economy had a devastating time of it in the early 90s because the aerospace business went away.
Correct.
And then fourth was we also had a national recession going at that time. So those four things basically created a situation where the entire housing market receded dramatically.
Were builders caught with a lot of unsold inventory at the end of that boom?
Yes.
As well?
Yes, they were.
Okay. Okay, so from 97 till 2005, somewhere in the middle of 05, California tripled in price again. I guess question is, what allowed that to happen, and then what brought the latest boom to an end, do you feel?
Okay, well, first of all, let me talk about cycles. Traditionally, in California, and really the nation, but most California, in every decade, we typically have three great years, three lousy years, and then four mediocre years, or let me say regular years.
Okay.
Okay. Almost always, and I have no reason why this happens, but almost always the last 3 years are the three good years.
The last 3 years of a decade?
Yes.
Okay.
Okay, now, we move into the year 2000, and something went wrong with the cycle.
I was going to say, I think we're about to change history here.
Well, that's the whole point.
Okay.
And I don't know what's going to happen. We typically, if you look at the early 90s, early 80s, early 70s, they were difficult times economically.
Yes.
And yet this time around, we have basically five good years at the beginning of a decade. And it is, I believe, it's inevitable that there has to be some cyclical aspect that causes the housing industry to slow down, and now we're in it.
Do you think the slowdown will reflect on the opposite trend, the explosive nature of our upcycle? In other words, we may have overdone it to an historic extent. Does that mean the downside might be also an historic event?
No.
No.
And I'm glad you said that, because what has happened, this is the first time in, let's say, since World War II, when we've had a slowdown in housing, but have had a strong economy.
Okay.
So we're it's another interesting situation, and the economists, of course, are scratching their heads.
Well, that's one of the questions that I'm going to call these pauses, these bad years, timeouts. Do these three timeouts have anything in common? That be the early 70s, early 80s, early 90s, and now 2007.
No.
They don't have anything in common.
Well, this is the first time we've not only had very good job gains, but we've also had low interest rates. Now, that should signal a strong housing market.
Well, it certainly has up until now.
Yes, correct. And that is why I feel quite certain that the market has gone down about as far as it's going to go and is now starting to come back.
Do you feel that interest rates are very significant to the future price gains or losses then?
Oh, absolutely.
Okay, and has that historically been true?
Oh, yes.
Okay.
Incidentally, I mean, typically in the recoveries, interest rates have been much higher than they are now.
Oh, absolutely. But they also, in recoveries, they usually go down to assist, because you usually end up with some kind of recession. You end up having, for instance, in let's say the 90 to 95 era, you had interest rates decline something from 10 to, say, 7.5.
Yes.
And so that helps build in maybe more people can afford the properties, that type of thing.
Yeah, and I think now people are just expecting interest rates to be below 7%.
That's an interesting thought because as an investor, I started my career right around 1981, and I refinanced my house at 17.5% to become one. And back then, the thought that interest rates would never get below double digits was pretty predominant, and now just the opposite is true.
Yes.
Do you foresee any time in the next 5 to 6 years an event that might cause interest rates to be much higher than they are now?
Well, the only thing that could cause them to be higher is if foreign countries stop buying our paper. And I don't see that happening because the amount of equity being built up in India and China is so enormous, they must put it somewhere. And the reality is you have your choice of the dollar or the euro, and then there's nothing else. So it should keep interest rates fairly reasonable.
Do you see any event outside of that, of say, an oil embargo due to some conflict in the Middle East? Do you see that wild card as any kind of a chance causing us problems with interest rates?
Well, it's sort of interesting. When gas was at $1.25 and Congress suggested we put a dollar tax on it to slow down the use of fuel by Americans, everybody said, that'll kill the country. Well, now we've gone up to where it's $4 a gallon, and it hasn't hurt anything. So now, certainly an embargo would hurt us, but price of fuel doesn't seem to have had much of an impact on the economy.
No, that's true. So far it hasn't. Do you think lack of fuel would, though?
No question.
Okay. Now, do you think that a lot of our buoyancy as a consumer is because we've been able to access a lot of equity that showed up?
Oh, no doubt about it.
Okay. If that doesn't occur, let's say, in the next 3 or 4 years, will the consumer be forced to take a break, or are they going to find a way to get whatever they want?
Well, they'll find a way. I mean, there's basic housing demand, particularly in California, where we grow every single year by 500,000 people or more. I say 500,000 because that's what they can count. But whether or not they're legal or illegal, they still have to live somewhere. And the demand for housing keeps going up.
Let's say I'm a builder, and it's your job to kind of give me an idea of what's coming. What is it that you look for to try to convince a builder that a negative scenario is about to occur, even though the builder may be experiencing very good times right now? So what are some of those charts you look at and say, guys, I know it's great now, but in a little while, this is not going to work?
There's really not much of a change. Builders are builders. and they will answer the need for housing. Now, what is going to happen now, and it's really quite a very positive thing, is that the price of lots to builders, and most builders don't manufacture their own lots, they buy them. That has been a situation where lot prices have gone off the chart in 2004 and 2005. Now they're receding, and because the lot prices are receding, they are going to be able to produce smaller homes for lesser prices. So you will see not the decline in the price of homes, but the decline in both the size of homes and therefore the price of homes.
Okay.
And that, of course, is highly positive for the economy because more people will be able to afford homes.
Okay. As an advisor, do you look at an initial event that lets you know that a boom is over, or does it change with every cycle?
Well, we knew this time around 2 years ago. So that we could already see in the research that we did that things were slowing down substantially as early as mid-05.
So if you were talking to a developer in mid-05, you were telling them we have to be careful about being aggressive?
Very much so.
Okay. What was the indicator that you saw that told you that? Was it buildup of inventory or...
No, the inventory really numbers got very high.
Okay.
The builders learned from the last recession that they really have to keep the inventory very low, and of course it's extremely low now. So what gave us a clue was traffic and the peaking out of prices.
When traffic declines, isn't it because of something else? I mean, it doesn't just decide to decline. So do you know what causes that?
There's a herd mentality. The American public is sort of amazing that way. Something goes off in their head that says something's not right, and they back off, and it doesn't have anything to do with what's written in the local press.
But we don't know what that something is. It just...
No.
It can be different each time.
It can be... Well, no, most other times it's been related to major economic changes that were most obvious.
I see.
Like the high interest rates in the 1980-82 period.
So this time it truly was different.
Yes, it was. Oh. I mean, the job markets were booming, and the home buying market basically went out and said to itself, you know, these prices are getting silly. I think I'm going to sit back. Now, there were some who went forward and bought, and those are the ones who have had their subprime problems and losses the last couple of years.
So do you think the worst is over then, or close to the worst is over for California?
Yes. When you track the foreclosures and the notices of default on a monthly basis, I think you'll see that we probably another 6 months or so we will have peaked, because basically most of those people bought in the same 6 month period and using loan dollars that they shouldn't have borrowed, and they are only going to hold on for so long, and I think now's about the time when they're going to say, forget it, I'll give the house back.
Do you know what percentage of the notices of defaults ultimately turn into trustee sales and end up at the courthouse steps?
In the past, it's been 10%.
And that's during good times and bad?
Yes.
Okay. Now, last month, Realty Track reported that it was up to 40%.
Yeah.
So is that reflecting that there's no equity and therefore people can't solve the problem?
Yes.
Okay.
Now, what also has to be taken into effect is the fact that the lenders are just now developing programs to keep foreclosures from happening by working out better agreements for loans, allowing basically a short-term period where they could pay less money per month and tack it on to the back of a loan. Lenders obviously don't want the homes back. That's the last thing they want.
They're getting a lot of them right at the moment. It's interesting. California pretty much is a non-recourse state. So let's just say I'm a borrower. I'm in Menifee, which is an area that's getting hit pretty hard.
Yeah.
I got $550 I owe on a house that now my neighbor's house is set for sale for $450. A lender calls me up, and I'm a couple months behind, and he wants to work it out. I find it hard to rationalize how a great percentage of those people will want to work out when they look at their scenario and they see no equity. So if we have a negative equity situation, do you expect any workouts to be very successful?
Well, first of all, most people are really buying a house to live in the house.
Correct.
And if they like where they live and they even have a minor sense of history, they'll know that the prices will go back up. And it's just a relatively short time period when they'll be back up. So in the meantime, if they can work out a little something with their lender, that's good, and they'll hang on. I mean, Americans will do almost everything they can to keep their home from going back to a lender.
That's true. Now, you know, I always hear the term the majority of them. Now, at what percentage does it become a problem? We have a certain percentage of the market being in foreclosure. At what percentage does it become critical? And I don't think it's a very big percentage.
Well, it's a situation where you have to look at the foreclosures and see their composition. In other words, in Southern California, a large part of the foreclosures fell into two categories. One was timeshare units, and there are some areas where there are very few timeshares, like Riverside County. But in San Diego County, a major share of the foreclosures are timeshare units, which I, in essence, don't even consider real estate.
No, I don't either.
Okay. A second major part is older condominiums or condominium conversions where you have projects where you may have, let's say, 200 units in the project that are all the same floor plan, and 30% of them were bought by investors with zero down. And those are the projects that have the major problems and the major declines in value. The single-family market has not gone through that anywhere near as much.
Okay. We only have a couple more minutes. Let me just ask you a couple of categories. If you consider these most important, a range up to 10 would be very important, one of very little importance. Increasing affordability from our levels that we're at right now.
Well, it's certainly a 10 because it's really the problem with the entire California housing market.
Okay, so if we increase affordability, we end up with a better real estate market?
Yes.
Okay. What about foreclosures if they reach all-time highs? Is that going to be a problem?
No.
No. Okay.
It's still an insignificant percent of the housing market.
Was it insignificant in 1989 as far as a percentage?
Yeah, the last time it was really bad was in Texas in the 80s.
Yeah, that was bad.
That was really bad.
Now, what about California in 89? Because that was probably, or excuse me, I'm sorry, 97. 97 was our peak in foreclosure.
Well, as a percent of the total number of housing units,
right,
it remained insignificant, and it is that today as well.
Okay. Well, and I wish we had a lot more time to talk. I find it very interesting. Thank you for all the work that you put into what you do. And I look forward to doing this again sometime very soon.
I'm around.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
You've been listening to the Norris Group's Real Estate Radio Show. For more information on the Norris Group, please visit www.thenorrisgroup.com or email questions and or comments to radio@thenorrisgroup.com. We'll see you next week at 5:30 here on News Talk 590 KTIE.